Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
This is Robert Crowther at the Center for Science and Culture in Seattle. I am happy to be joined today by Center Senior Fellow Biologist Michael Behe. Welcome to ID the Future, Mike.
Thanks, Rob. It's always great to be with you.
Yes, it's always nice to have you. We have a lot to talk about today. And for our regular listeners, of course, Dr. Behe is well known for his groundbreaking bestseller, Darwin's Black Box, which he followed up with The Edge of Evolution a few years ago. Well, actually, I guess it was probably about a decade ago now that The Edge of Evolution came out, didn't it?
Time flies, yeah.
Yes, it does. And then just earlier this year, you published Darwin Devolves, which has also had a big impact on the whole discussion over intelligent design and evolution. And listeners can find out more about the book and its reception over at darwindevolves.com. But actually, I'm sure we'll touch on the books and some of the research you've been doing, but I wanted to talk to you a little bit about a recent trip you had to Brazil. You have had quite a year, haven't you?
Yeah. It's a great thing. You publish a book and people invite you to go all sorts of places. You get kind of free vacations. It's wonderful.
So you were in Brazil and you were there at the Discovery McKenzie in Sao Paulo, which is our joint venture between Discovery Institute and McKenzie University, which is the largest private university in Brazil. And they were the host and the sponsor of this trip, right?
That's right. Professor Marcos Eberlin, who wrote Foresight, which was published by Discovery Institute Press, he's a professor at McKenzie University. And he's a very well-known chemist who specializes in mass spectroscopy. And he invited me down for a week because he organized the translation of Darwin's Black Box into Portuguese.
Wow.
And it's coming out. And so my trip down there was kind of a kickoff for the book as well as just for general interest.
Well, I saw your itinerary, and I find it hard to believe you ever had a chance to sleep. It looked like you were speaking every morning, every afternoon, and every night.
Yeah. Marcos is quite a taskmaster, I'll tell you. And I would get home at, past midnight, and he'd be there at 8 a.m. the next day to pick me up to go somewhere else. But we reached a lot of people. One of the first events we did was to talk on a TV show. There's a TV show called Vejam So, and I'm not quite sure what that means. My Portuguese is pretty limited, but it turns out it has a pretty big audience. It has a million or 2 million people that watch it every night. It's a discussion show, and they talk about all sorts of things, from science to philosophy and art and politics and so on. And so Marcos and I were there and were interviewed by the host.
Oh, great.
For about a half hour show. And it was really, really very interesting.
And so this is to help kind of promote and launch Darwin's Black Box in Brazil. So is that what they were focusing on mostly?
Yeah, that was probably two thirds of the discussion. And another third, I talked about my new book, Darwin Devolves, and Professor Eberlin is overseeing the translation of that as well into Portuguese. So I spoke about both of them. So that was a lot of fun for me. But everywhere we went, people were really enthusiastic. I was remarking on that, and Marcos, too, was impressed just by the enthusiasm of the folks in Brazil. Everywhere we went, we had packed audiences and lots of questions, great amount of interest.
I know you spoke at universities, including McKenzie, of course, and they have multiple campuses. So you were in different places associated with the university. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. McKenzie, as you mentioned earlier, is the largest private university in Brazil. And it's got something like 40,000 students. And it's located in Sao Paulo, Brazil, which itself has a population of 20 million people. And the first event we went to was a conference on intelligent design at McKenzie University, their main campus in Sao Paulo. And there were a number of scientists there and a couple philosophers as well. And I got to give two talks, one on Darwin's black box and then the other on Darwin Devolves. From there, we went to a high school that Mackenzie runs, and they call it a college in Brazil. So we went to Mackenzie College and talked to about 100 or 200 students, ages probably 15, 16 or so. And I was really impressed because at all the other events, Marcos acted as my interpreter. But right before I was starting to speak, the principal of the school says, "We will not have a translation. All the students will listen to the English and respond in English."
Wow.
English. Yeah. And they spoke better English than I did, I'll tell you. They comprehended everything. They spoke like an American teen walking down the street, and they asked really great questions. They were very enthusiastic. After the talk, a dozen of them came and stayed, which was after school for them. My talk was the last of the day, so they stayed, you know, for another half hour asking me particular questions. And I was really very impressed with their education, their ability to handle English, and their enthusiasm.
That's great. Now, I have to ask a little bit about the reception that you received there versus what you find maybe at universities and other places in the United States. And first, I'd like to know from your point of view, you speak a lot all over this country and obviously all around the world. When you are speaking to largely, student audiences, the majority students, what is the reception like? Is it cordial? Are they skeptical? Are they interested? How's that go?
Well, it can be mixed depending on the circumstances. Mackenzie, of course, is a Christian university, and the kids there asked very good questions, but they were polite. They were supposed to, they had to be polite. The principal was there, should smack them around. And I've gone to high schools in the United States and spoken, and students there were interested and polite and asked good questions as well. Even, you know, public and charter and Christian high schools, pretty much students haven't taken sides yet, and they're just interested in learning this view that they hadn't heard about before. But in other places, I've had, shall we say, more challenging interactions with students in the United States. Actually, in all my foreign talks and discussions, they've been pretty polite. But in the United States, it's a real hot button topic. And sometimes I remember one encounter at the University of California, San Francisco, where I talked with graduate students, and they were anxious to, smack down this heretic. but that's the exception. The rule is that students, not so much faculty, but students are always interested and polite and willing to listen.
Well, that's good, because if you follow this debate online, which almost everybody does nowadays, right? How do we get most of our information? It's digital. It tends to be more polarized, and people want to lash out at a viewpoint they may not agree with for whatever reason, or to put down the heretic, as you mentioned. Things go better usually, not always, but usually in person. And my suspicion, you're kind of confirming, is that students tend to be more, they're willing to engage, but they just want to hear about these things without necessarily attacking the messenger.
Yeah, that's right. And the younger the students, the more that's the case. When you get up to graduate students and postdocs and so on, they've started to settle into a defined point of view and don't really want to listen too much. But yeah, certainly high school and college students too, they're exploring the world. They want to hear more and more points of view. And they're, happy to listen. Doesn't mean that they'll immediately change their minds and agree with you, but they are curious. They say, "Hey, this is something I haven't heard before. Let me listen up, and maybe there's something here that'll be of interest."
Yeah. Well, you interacted not just with students, but I know you spoke at Sao Paulo Adventist University to one of your biggest audiences, I think. And that was predominantly professors and I think probably higher level students, maybe grad students and so on. And that was a pretty big audience. How did that go?
It was interesting. I got there, it was probably about 45 minutes before the talk was supposed to begin. And there were maybe, six people in the auditorium. And I was looking out kind of nervously, and they were all checking their cell phones and stuff. And about 10 minutes to go, there were maybe 50 to 100. But then when we started, there were over 600 people in the auditorium. And it filled it up. And everybody listened politely. And I couldn't really get a read on how people were receiving the talk. But after it was over, I was really swarmed by the students there at the college. They lined up for selfies, photos with me.
Wow.
And I've never experienced anything like that. You know, certainly not when I get home to my family. That doesn't happen to me. And it was interesting that the Seventh-day Adventist University in Sao Paulo was celebrating the 30th anniversary of the establishment of their biology department. So this was part of the celebration of that 30th anniversary. And the chancellor of the university was there, and many of the higher administrators, all the faculty were there. It was a great success. So people who know the background science, biology majors and faculty and so on, get to hear about intelligent design firsthand, and they were very appreciative. I talked to a number of people who said, it's really great to have somebody come down to Brazil and discuss these things with us, as we're out of the way of the North America, Europe routes, and they don't get speakers as often.
Well, that's great because they need it just like everybody else. And it must be nice for you to get a chance to go somewhere like Brazil. I've never been. It must be a great place.
Yeah, it is. The only complaint I had is that when I got on the plane to come back to the United States, the plane was just barely able to take off because I had gained so much weight from all the food that they gave me. They wouldn't take no for an answer when I tried to politely decline. It was really, really terrific. If you've never been there or to a Brazilian restaurant, they have these curuscaras. I'm probably mangling the pronunciation, but they're beef houses or meat houses where waiters come around with skewers full of, different kinds of beef, different cuts and so on. And they slice off with these very sharp, very long knives. They slice off pieces of meat and put it on your plate, whichever you want. And the food is terrific, but it's if you're trying to keep your slim trim figure, it's a little difficult.
You're making me hungry.
Yeah, me too.
Before we get too far down the dinner path, I did want to talk for a second about maybe you can highlight where you see the overall debate going in the near future. What are some of the biggest issues that you think may be coming up? Are these going to be things we've all been discussing for a while, or do you see some new areas of research that we might be surprised to be hearing about in the next few years?
Well, Casey Stengel said, it's hard to make predictions, especially about the future. But I think, maybe this is my ego talking, but I think more people will be noticing the effect of degradative mutations that are beneficial to evolution, and seeing that the idea of my newest book, Darwin Devolves, is correct, that in fact Darwin's mechanism works just fine, but it works mostly by breaking genes and throwing out ones that are holding a species back or don't fit in a new environment as well as in a previous environment. And if, as more people realize that this is the way evolution works, they'll see that some other explanation, purposeful design, as I argue, is necessary to explain where all that information, all that complex machinery came from in the first place.
Right.
And everywhere you look, I always tell people that the main momentum behind intelligent design is not anything I've done or anything, you know, any particular person has done, but the science. It's the more and more we know about the foundation of life, the cellular and molecular foundation of life, the more utterly astonishing we discover it to be, and the more deficient or the more hopeless Darwin's mechanism seems to account for it. And I think more and more people are waking up to that.
I think you were exactly right. It's the science that's going to move the debate overall going forward. So we're appreciative for you, the research you're doing, and keeping abreast of all the other research that is out there and reviewing that and using it to add to the arguments that you're making and some of the other ID proponents.
Sure. Yeah, that's it's such an interesting topic. I just feel privileged to be in the middle of the debate because you can say things that are utterly obvious and people, you know, react as if they've heard a ghost or, you know, a vampire or something. So you get to argue with really, really smart people and win because they're trying to deny something that's again, quite obvious.
Yeah. Well, Mike, I want to thank you for being with us today. And if people haven't read your latest book, I just want to encourage them to do that, to keep up with the debate. The book is causing its own debate, I guess, and people can follow that at darwindevolves.com. There's a great page there that has links to various critical reviews that people have written of Darwin Devolves, and as well, it has the responses from you and other scientists. So it's like a written debate live right on the page.
Yeah, if anybody wants to know the real nitty-gritty and to see how arguments stand up when two sides go back and forth a few times, you know, that's the place to go.
Right. So that's at darwindevolves.com. Again, I want to thank Mike Behe. Glad you're home safe from all your international travels, and look forward to what we see coming in the next year.
Yeah, thanks, Rob. It's always great to be on with you.
From the Center for Science and Culture, I'm Robert Crowther. Thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org and idthefuture.com.